Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's foray into all that is freaky and geeky, of course. Welcome to Freaks and Geeks Paranormal Radio Show. Thank you so much for listening in. We really appreciate it. And if you're a first-timer, please join us on our Facebook page. It is blowing up. It is popping like crazy right now. It's fantastic. And we're actually doing a contest right now, a giveaway. If you like and share our post, there's a post on there for this. If you like and share it, then you are in the running to get a K2. And I think as of right now, there's only like 11 people. And we're closing it out on Friday. So you got a pretty solid shot. I mean, that's better than the lottery. I think that's pretty solid. So tonight, as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Carrie, and the third member of our terrible triad, Chris. Of course.
Hello.
Hey, can I win that K2?
No, you cannot. Oh. I wish you could, because then we would have another K2 lying around. But that would, to me, that would be favoritism, and we just can't have that.
Yeah.
This is
if we bring you on as the third member of Freaks and Geeks, then you are forfeit to all contest giveaways.
Yep. Oh,
man. That's a harsh price to pay.
Hey, I got to tell you guys something. So, I had this reading last night from this girl who, she runs the business. The business's name is Bright Spirit, and it's B-R-E-I-T, and then Spirit, just regular Spirit. And it was incredible. Like, she was fantastic. We ended up on the phone for like 2 hours just talking about stuff. It was crazy. It's one of the best readings I've ever had, and it definitely gave me a lot of insight into my life. Now, going into it, I was thinking to myself, I can read my own tarot. Like, I mean, it's always good to get somebody else's perspective, and the cards don't speak to you the same way that they're going to speak to somebody else. For instance, Carrie, you know your card's going to be sassy when you talk to them because that's just how they treat you. That's right. The kind of relationship that y'all have. But she was using oracle cards, and she was able to give me insights into things that I had never even imagined would be possible. It was great. It was a great reading. She actually, I don't know if you saw this or not in our messages, she has pledged a free 20-minute reading for the next giveaway.
See, Chris,
that's awesome.
You should have waited just one more week.
I know.
Yep, should have waited just one more week. So I feel like next week, the 7th through like the 13th or so, we'll probably run another giveaway, and we'll do her 20-minute reading, and then we'll give away one of her pendants. Like, she makes her own jewelry. No, it's really, really pretty. All natural gemstones, just really good stuff, top of the line. So we'll go ahead and pony up for the gemstone of whoever's choice, and they'll get a free reading out of it. So pretty stoked about that. I know that's off topic, but I'm excited. I feel like my life is in a better direction.
She was geeking out about it last night. Like,
I was geeking out about it last night. It was like, Chris, we need to have sex. She said, I need to get laid more. So,
yeah, the audience knows our love life now.
Well, we didn't, though. So, anyway, speaking of sex, it's Beltane. See how I did that? It's Beltane.
Oh, man.
And that is the entrance into summer. It is a Celtic holiday that is also celebrated by pagans and Wiccans alike, and there are a lot of people that celebrate it. It's really cool. So it is actually, it's 183 days from Halloween, and it's 183 days until Halloween. So it literally is half Halloween right now today. And usually they celebrate, and that's Samhain, of course, as well, which is like the introduction to the winter solstice and all that. But this tonight is all about celebrating fertility and a marriage between gods. And, you know, it's it's a really powerful holiday, and it's all about life and just really living it up big. There's a lot of fire symbolism and the ceremonies and stuff like that. People dance naked around the fire, and it's just a big party.
And in 9 months, there's a lot of babies born.
And in 9 months, there are a lot of babies born.
Yeah.
I need to get my fire going right now. I need to light up some
blueberries.
Get you some candles,
baby, and get started.
Sage.
Yep.
No, we don't need no more babies, especially since
sure
we just had. Since we just had the other two kids here last week, I think we're good.
Sure.
It's Beltane, babe. Beltane. Plus, my psychic said that I have to, you know, get laid more.
That doesn't mean I have more babies.
Yeah, nobody does. It's Beltane. Fertility.
Gotta do it for Beltane.
Gotta do it for Beltane, babe. I'm going to set, as soon as we get off of here, we have our little meeting about the episodes, upcoming episodes. What I'm going to do is I'm going to walk my ass outside to our fire pit. I'm going to light that bitch on fire, and then we're going to dance around naked. That's what's going
to
happen.
And then the HOA is going to be like, you need to move.
We're going to get a note on our door. It's just like,
you've been evicted.
We could you please manage to keep your pagan celebrations to a minimum? No one wants to see you naked. Like, that's what's going to happen. You're scaring the children. Our kids were up really late last night because you guys were, like, grunting like animals outside and dancing around naked. That's what's going to happen.
Well,
yeah.
Speaking of weird activities, I mean, I guess that leads right into the subject for tonight.
It definitely does. I think it definitely does. So tonight, we are going to take a trip to the Bermuda Triangle. We are going to talk about missing planes. We're going to talk about boats. We're going to talk about mysterious sightings. We're going to talk about all these things. Hell, we might even talk a little bit about zombies. We'll talk about all that stuff and more after the jump.
We'll be right back.
All right, everyone. So let's get right into our topic tonight, the Bermuda Triangle.
Yes, so the Bermuda Triangle is one of the paranormal hotspots that I count among my earliest ventures into the land of the spooky woo-woos.
Yes, spooky woo-woo.
I don't know what a spooky woo-woo is, but one thing, like, when I heard what the topic was going to be, I started thinking, like, as a kid growing up, the Bermuda Triangle seemed to be a lot more, I guess, mysterious, or you would hear it and you'd be like, oh, that's where stuff never comes back from. But, like, growing up, it just seems to maybe have lost its luster, or maybe it's just technology has advanced to the point where it's not, like, I guess, not as mysterious as it used to be.
Well, okay, all right, smarty pants McGee. If that is true, then what is your explanation for why planes and ships disappear in the Bermuda Triangle?
Magnetic deposits under the sea.
Magnetic deposits under the sea.
Write that down, and we'll come back and check on that later.
I'm going to write it down for you. I'm literally writing it down right now. Magnetic deposits under the sea.
Yeah, right next to Ariel and Sebastian and Flounder.
And
singing
SpongeBob.
All the... Yeah, yes, right next to his pineapple.
Hobbits?
Right
what?
Next to his... It's Squidward hanging out. He needs some ships. Okay, well, we'll get into it. How about that? How about
right,
that?
Sounds good. I'm ready to learn.
Okay, good.
I kind of feel like that's what I mean. Like, as a kid, I felt like the Bermuda Triangle was going to be, like, a bigger deal than it has turned out to be in my life, kind of like quicksand.
Okay, but here's the thing about that. I think it didn't turn out to be a big deal in your life because you have never been to that region of the world. So,
or have I? Dun, dun, dun.
I mean...
Spiritually, she visits quite often.
I mean, that might be the case, but I feel like this makes a really good argument for freaks and geeks to take a little morale trip to Bermuda. They have zombies. So
well, as we'll discuss later in this episode, you might not have to travel as far as you think to get into the Bermuda Triangle.
True. Didn't it end in like Florida?
Oh,
like
we're gonna discuss that.
Let's go to the Bermuda Triangle for our 25th friendiversary. Let's go to the Bermuda Triangle. This sounds like a great idea.
I'm ready. So let's kind of start with that. Where is the Bermuda Triangle? It's located in the Atlantic Ocean, and one description is that it's roughly between Miami, Bermuda, and Puerto Rico, although that seems to be a more recent development, hence the triangle name. Also called the Hoodoo Sea, and more commonly, the Devil's Triangle, the size of the Bermuda Triangle is a hotly contested subject. Depending on the source, the area can vary in size from at least 500,000 square miles to as much as 1.5 million square miles. Unusual events in the Bermuda Triangle date to Christopher Columbus and his voyage to the New World that began in 1492. When he sailed through the area on his first trip, he reported that a great flame of fire crashed into the sea one night. Many scholars believe that this was a sighting of a meteor falling. According to his log, on the 8th of October in 1492, Columbus looked down at his compass and noticed that it was giving off some odd readings. He didn't alert his crew at first, because having a compass that didn't point to magnetic north may have sent the already on-edge crew into a panic. Columbus's writings also noted a strange light that appeared in the distance a few weeks later. That, on top of the erratic compass readings, resulted in his crew threatening a return to Spain. The shallow areas of the sea with no land nearby confused Columbus and his crew as well.
I'm just going to come out and say it. Aliens.
It's always aliens.
It's always alien.
I feel like what you're saying really lends itself to the magnetic deposits, but I still think that that's horseshit.
It's a
other than
crashed,
the plane and the light and stuff like that.
Spaceship. It's a spaceship that crashed.
The compass readings, though, I feel like that could lend itself to a large magnetic deposit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're not the EMF and the, yeah.
The compass,
think
yeah, I mean, it could.
I think it's a miasma of different things that cause the mysteries of the Bermuda Triangle.
Ooh, miasma.
Well, I mean, you literally just told us that you thought it was magnetic deposits.
I mean,
which is it? Is it a miasma or is it magnetic deposits?
It's just one of the things that's in the Bermuda Triangle stew.
Backing you into a corner here.
Yeah.
Just back it on up.
Yeah,
beep,
with that back of yours.
Beep. So, anywho, magnetic deposit man, Mr. Miasma, early writings about the Bermuda Triangle may have included a work by the bard himself, William Shakespeare. There's strong evidence that Shakespeare did use elements of the story of the wreck of the ship Sea Venture in his 1611 play, The Tempest. The ship was on its way to Jamestown, Virginia. Well, that's a shitty place to begin with. In 1609, when a huge storm, probably a hurricane, blew it onto the uninhabited island of Bermuda. There, the survivors repaired the ship and months later made it to Jamestown, where their arrival saved the colony from abandonment. See, I told you, it was shitty anyway. According to Colonial Williamsburg's research files, an account written by one of the voyage's members, William Strachey, entitled A True Reportory, that is literally what it says.
What the hell? What is that word?
It is reportory. It's one of those weird Elizabethan words that you're
like, yeah.
Is this a real word? Is this a made-up word? Was this just someone that had no idea what they were writing?
I mean, that's the original English. It's the original English. They're probably more right than we are. Of the wreck and the redemption of Sir Thomas Gates Knight. Gates was the future governor of the colony and a leader of the survivors. Was sent to an anonymous noble lady at court. It was not officially published until 1625, after the Tempest was first performed, but many scholars agree that Shakespeare was at least familiar with the story and incorporated parts of it into his tale of a shipwreck on a mysterious island. For more details, see Louis B. Wright's A Voyage to Virginia in 1609. Published in 1964, which republishes Strachey's A True Repertory and other primary accounts from Sylvester Jourdain's 1619 Discovery of Bermuda. Either or both of these could be Shakespeare's source. Another great book on the topic is Hobson Woodward's A Brave Vessel, the true tale of the castaways who rescued Jamestown and inspired Shakespeare's The Tempest. Seems like a pretty legit book.
I can't wait to read it.
I believe that about you. I will be passing on that one.
Well, I mean, doesn't, I guess theater back in that time, like, art portrayed reality to some extent for most of the plays back then, didn't it?
Yeah, and not even just in that time, just art in general is a reflection of what's happening in the world when it's created.
I feel like that hasn't changed that much.
No, it hasn't changed at all.
It's just become more abstract.
Some of it.
That was pretty abstract then, too. While the U.S. Board of Geographic Names does not recognize the Bermuda Triangle as an official name and does not maintain an official file in the area, the phrase is still pretty widely accepted. The name itself may have come from its Bermuda point because of the island's dangerous reefs. Once known as the Isle of Devils, Bermuda is surrounded by reefs that have caused hundreds of shipwrecks. The term Bermuda Triangle was first used in 1964 by Vincent Gaddis in an article for Argosy magazine. In the article, which was later expanded and included in his book, Gaddis noted the unexplainable disappearances of several ships and planes in the area. After National Geographic brought attention to Gaddis's book in 1967, many newspapers wrote articles about the incidents in the area. In 1971, a documentary film called The Devil's Triangle was released. A few years later, Charles Berlitz wrote a best-selling book about the area, which popularized the belief in its existence. Since then, numerous books and films have been created about the mysterious area.
All right, I want to call to attention the fact that the U.S. Board of Geographic Names, first off, that's a ridiculous office and sounds like the most made-up office. Somebody was like, I need a job. Okay, the geographic names, there, we got you. Like, what is that? It sounds made up. That sounds made up.
Like the Ministry of Silly Walks. Is that like that?
That's what it sounds like. It's like, is this what we base, like, official names on? Like, literally
a
board of geographic names? That's
the
national. That's the national weather. National weather. Why am I?
National Weather Service.
Service. Thank you. I was thinking society. I'm like, that's not right. The secret club. Yeah, they're the ones who give the hurricanes their exotic names.
So the U.S. Board on Geographic Names is a federal body created in 1890, and it was established in its present form by public law in 1947 to maintain uniform geographic name usage throughout the federal government. So I'm not calling Virginia, Virginia, and you're calling it Kentuckyburg.
Kentuckyburg. East Virginia. We have West Virginia.
Yeah.
Now we have East Virginia.
Right.
East Virginia, best Virginia.
To make sure everyone is using the same names.
I wonder what their reasoning is, though, for not accepting it. Maybe just because it's not, like, well, A, they can't decide on a actual location for it, and, like, B, it's not really a place, I guess,
yeah,
in the sense.
Yeah, it's not really a definable area.
Ships go missing in this general vicinity.
Right. And then one last addition. It's the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration that names hurricanes.
Oh! Face.
Yeah. Oh. Guess who's not getting any fertility tonight?
I mean, it's Beltane.
Gotta do it for Beltane. Gotta do
That's
it for
right. It's. Do you want to have bad luck for the rest of the year? Because this is you have bad luck for the rest of the year.
I told you how my first day at work went, so I don't know how much bad luck can I get.
Oh, shit, Carrie. God damn it, we forgot. Today was little Chrissy's day in his big boy job.
Oh, congratulations.
I lost my keys and I got yelled at for something that wasn't my fault.
Two different things. I got yelled at for two different things that didn't even have anything to do with him. It's here we are.
Yeah.
Full circle. Day.
Here we are.
I'm in my own Bermuda Triangle.
I tried to tell him that life was going to get much harder, and he still doesn't believe me.
I think it's
now it's
fantastic.
Just ego.
I have a lot of it.
Yeah, it's just
I have so much ego, it fills up the Bermuda Triangle. Oh, brought it back.
Oh, Jesus. Okay. You know what? I'm going to let it go. You know what? You'll find out soon enough. Don't worry. Just wait. Your soul will be crushed soon enough.
It's Beltane, babe.
It's Beltane. Woo! All right,
do it for Beltane.
All right, so the Bermuda Triangle is known for the mysterious disappearances of ships and planes. Today, some people believe this area sees an unusually high number of unexplainable events. Woo! However, there is no evidence that incidents occur more frequently in the Bermuda Triangle than in other well-traveled areas of the ocean, if that wasn't frightening enough. Still, there are documented disappearances of both aircraft and ships in the area. One of the most well-known disappearances is that of the USS Cyclops. In March 1918, with more than 300 men on board, the Navy cargo ship vanished somewhere between Barbados and the Chesapeake Bay. Despite being equipped to do so, the Cyclops never sent out a distress signal and no wreckage has ever been found. Cyclops, the only ship of her class, was engaged in the transportation of bulk cargo to and from the United States to Brazil in early 1918. On 9 January 1918, she was assigned to Naval Overseas Transportation Service, departing Norfolk the day before with 9,900 tons of coal for English ships in the South Atlantic. She arrived at Rio de Janeiro on 28th January 1918. She departed Rio de Janeiro on 15 February, carrying a load of 10,000 long tons, whatever that is.
I got 10,000 long tons.
Long tons. It's Beltane.
Do it, Beltane.
Of manganese ore. And on 20 February, Cyclops entered Bahia.
It's my birthday, humble brag.
Help me, Jesus.
Help me.
Oh, my God. Have you been drinking?
Have you been drinking? No.
I'm scared of you. 2 days later, on the 22nd of February, 1918, she departed for Baltimore, Maryland with no stop. Scheduled. Rather than proceeding directly to Baltimore as scheduled, Cyclops deviated to Barbados, arriving on the 3rd of March 1918. At this port, she was about 1,800 nautical miles from her destination. Before leaving Rio, Commander Worley, the commanding officer, reported that the Cyclops' starboard engine was inoperative because it had cracked. The Cyclops. Because it had a cracked cylinder, reducing her speed to 10 knots. This was confirmed by a survey board, which recommended that the ship return to the U.S. for repairs. There were suggestions that the ship was overloaded when she departed Brazil. Certainly, the addition of more coal in her bunkers and water at Barbados may have offset any reduction in draft achieved during the voyage north. Post-sinking investigations in Rio concluded the ship had been heavily loaded. She had no prior experience carrying ore. I mean, these seem like legitimate reasons why a ship might go down.
It's too heavy. It just goes right down.
It's too heavy, and it's already fucked up to begin with. The engine's fucked up.
It's got a crack cylinder.
If that's the case, then you'd think they would have found some wreckage at that point.
Well, the ocean is huge.
I mean... We got sonar.
We didn't even have a giant squid till like 20 years ago. Who knows what's at the bottom?
Well, I mean, April can attest to this. I'm afraid of the ocean. I do not go into the ocean but with my feet. I will not go into it because I was almost taken away by the undertow when I was a kid. So that ocean, it's scary for a lot of reasons.
Coelacanth.
Who knows what?
Coelacanth.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Zulu.
Yeah.
I mean, who knows what you're stepping on while you're walking on the walking in the ocean waters? Step on a jellyfish.
Everything.
Yes. So, all that shit happened. Cyclops failed to arrive at Baltimore and no record has ever been found. We know this to be true. Absent direct proof, it appears most likely that a synergy of events caused the loss of the Cyclops. By the way, I would highly recommend Googling the Cyclops, the USS Cyclops. It's actually a really interesting looking ship. I kind of have a thing for ships, but this one's really cool looking. So, and it's the only ship of its kind. So go ahead and Google it if you're interested. It's fun. But the ship was operating on a single shaft because of the cracked cylinder.
Hey.
This This reduced her speed and maneuverability and left Cyclops at greater risk of damage if she were to suffer a further engineering casualty. She was loaded deeply at or beyond her marks. I'm just waiting for Christopher to laugh.
I've already started laughing. Loaded deeply. Beltane.
Beyond her marks. Hashtag Beltane. This cargo was new to the ship, and it is not clear that the officer's crew or stevedores.
I'm assuming those are like dudes that worked on the ports.
I literally have no idea. In Brazil, I would guess so.
Yes, that's what they're.
Context clues.
They had fab outfits too. We'll post a picture.
Oh, really?
Are they the ones that have like those cool like the hats that have the little tabs that come off the side?
Yeah, and the striped shirt.
Oh yeah. Somebody's fabulous.
God. There is so much smoke in this room right now. My eyes are burning.
Do it for Beltane.
Too much Beltane right now. Too much Beltane in this room. Okay. So, it's not clear that the fabulous stevedores in Brazil knew how to properly load, stow, and trim the ore. There have been reports that she previously suffered hull damage due to coal fire, hull failures, or separation of pipes, or hull and strength members. She also had problems with extreme rolls. On at least one occasion, it was reported that her cargo had shifted. Water entering the hull would affect the ship's stability and buoyancy, probably resulting in free service effect that caused progressive flooding and ultimately causing her to sink. This process may have been imperceivable to the bridge watch, particularly if it occurred during a dark or extreme weather. They would have little noticed that the ship was about to sink. If Cyclops had not previously lost her remaining engine, she may have continued to steam along, driving the bow underwater alternately. Alternatively, she capsized. Regarding the incident, President Woodrow Wilson said, "Only God and the sea know what happened to that great ship." In 1941, two sister ships also disappeared along nearly the same route.
Aliens. They saw our engineering prowess, and the aliens were jealous. And they were like, we need these ships. And they beamed them up. And that's why we never seen them again.
See, okay, so I'm not saying it's not aliens, but that explanation doesn't make any sense. If they have super advanced spacecraft, they're not worth, like, just wait till you see the picture of the ship. They're not, it's not aliens.
Maybe
no,
they saw them as vintage and they wanted them for a collection or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
it
for the humans, too.
Vintage.
It looks vintage. I wonder, like...
I'm bringing it up.
The line that two sister ships also disappeared along nearly the same route. Like, were they carrying the same loads? Or were they just sort of like, let's retrace these steps to see if we can figure out where it went down? Those two disappear? Like, after a while, when you start just losing ships along that route, you need to pick a different route.
Well, it's
pick a different kind of ship.
Yeah.
Well, I thought the Cyclops was the only one of its kind.
It was the only one of its kind. Like, I'm looking at it right now, but it's just weird shit. And it's got, like, really low... It's really low in the water, so, I mean...
It looks like something that somebody has cobbled together and is sailing up and down the James in the Richmond area today.
Yeah, it does. It absolutely does. But it's super low down to the water. Like, here, I'll send you a picture of it, Christopher.
It is very low down to the water. So, if it was overloaded, I kind of lean towards it capsizing or sinking or whatever. It being overloaded plus the issues it was already having probably...
What
contributing to its disappearance, because if it was overloaded, it didn't have far to go.
My thing is like, what's on the top of? Are they playing? Is that a field goal post?
Yes.
That's what that looks like.
As it sunk into the sea, the aliens yelled, "Goal!"
It's good. Okay. I'm telling you, it's aliens.
So the next thing that happens is, in December 1945, five U.S. Navy Avenger torpedo bombers carrying 14 men disappeared. It began as nothing more than a routine training flight. At 2:10 p.m. on December the 5th, 1945, they took off from Naval Air Station in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. The planes, collectively known as Flight 19, were scheduled to tackle a three-hour exercise known as Navigation Problem Number 1. Their triangular flight plan called for them to head east from the Florida coast and conduct bombing runs at a place called Hens and Chickens Shoals. They would then turn north and proceed over Grand Bahama Island before changing course a third time and flying southwest back to base. Save for one plane that only carried two men, each of the Avengers was crewed by three Navy men or Marines, most of whom had logged around 300 hours in the air. The flight's leader was Lieutenant Charles C. Taylor, an experienced pilot and veteran of several combat missions in World War II's Pacific Theater. At first, Flight 19's hop proceeded just as smoothly as the previous 18 that day. Taylor and his pilots buzzed over Hens and Chickens Shoals around 2:30 p.m. and dropped their practice bombs without incident. But shortly after the patrol turned north for the second leg of its journey, something very strange happened. For reasons that are still unclear, Taylor became convinced that his Avenger's compass was malfunctioning and that his planes had been flying in the wrong direction. The troubles only mounted after a front blew in and brought rain, gusting winds, and heavy cloud cover. Flight 19 became hopelessly disoriented. "I don't know where we are," one of the pilots said over the radio. "We must have got lost after that last turn." Lieutenant Robert F. Cox, another Navy flight instructor who was flying near the Florida coast, was the first to overhear the patrol radio's communications. He immediately informed the air station of the situation and then contacted the Avengers to ask if they needed assistance. "Both my compasses are out, and I'm trying to find Fort Lauderdale, Florida," Taylor said, his voice sounding anxious. "I'm over land, but it's broken. I'm sure I'm in the Keys, but I don't know how far down." Taylor's claim didn't seem to make any sense. He'd made his scheduled pass over Hens and Chickens Shoals in the Bahamas less than an hour earlier, but he now believed his planes had somehow drifted hundreds of miles off course and ended up in the Florida Keys. The 27-year-old had just transferred to Fort Lauderdale from Miami, and many have since speculated that he may have confused some of the islands of the Bahamas for the Keys. Under normal circumstances, pilots lost in the Atlantic were supposed to point their planes toward the setting sun and fly west toward the mainland, but Taylor had become convinced that he might be over the Gulf of Mexico. Hoping to locate the Florida Peninsula, he made a fateful decision to steer Flight 19 northeast, a course that would only take them even farther out to sea. Some of his pilots seemed to have recognized that he was making a mistake. "Damn it," one man griped over the radio, "if we would just fly west, we would get home." Taylor was eventually persuaded to turn around and head west, but shortly after 6 p.m., he seems to have canceled the order and once again changed direction. "We didn't go far enough east," he said, still worried that he might be in the Gulf. "We may as well just turn around and go east again." His pilots probably argued against the decision. Some investigators even believe that one plane broke off and flew in a different direction, but most followed their commander's lead. Flight 19's radio transmissions soon became increasingly faint as it meandered out to sea. When fuel began to run low, Taylor was heard prepping his men for a potential crash landing into the ocean. "All planes close up tight," he said. "We'll have to ditch unless landfall. When the first plane drops below 10 gallons, we all go down together." A few minutes later, the Avengers' last radio communications were replaced by an eerie buzz of static.
Can we just... Can we just really... What? This is stereotypical. This is so, like... It is absolutely military culture. That when something is going bad and the leader, you know, for leaders to not recognize, "Oh, wow, I fucked up," and then to just keep making shit worse because they would rather stick to their guns than admit that they don't know what the fuck they're doing. Oh, it's frustrating.
This seems like less of the Bermuda Triangle and more of a retarded commander.
Yeah, it seems like more of a commander who couldn't admit that he didn't know what the hell was happening.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That's very frustrating because these men probably died because of this.
Yeah, yeah.
We're all gonna go down together. Fuck that. I would break off too. I would absolutely break off too.
So the Navy immediately scrambled search planes to hunt for the missing patrol. Around 7:30 p.m., a pair of PBM Mariner flying boats took off from an air station north of Fort Lauderdale. Just 20 minutes later, however, one of them seemed to follow Flight 19's lead by suddenly vanishing off of radar. The remains of the Mariner and its 13 crewmen were never recovered, but it's commonly believed that the seaplane exploded shortly after takeoff. Flying boats were notoriously accident-prone and were even nicknamed flying gas tanks for the propensity for catching fire. Suspicions that the seaplane may have gone up in flames were all but confirmed by a passing merchant ship, which spotted a fireball and found evidence of an oil slick in the ocean. At first light the next day, the Navy dispatched more than 300 boats and aircraft to search for Flight 19 and the missing Mariner. The search party spent 5 days combing through more than 300,000 square miles of territory to no avail. They just vanished, Navy Lieutenant David White later recalled. We had hundreds of planes out looking, and we searched over land and water for days, and nobody ever found the bodies or any debris. A Navy Board of Investigation was also left scratching its head. While it argued that Taylor might have confused the Bahamas for the Florida Keys after his compasses malfunctioned, it could find no clear explanation for why Flight 19 had become so disoriented. Its members eventually attributed the loss to causes or reasons unknown. The strange events of December 5, 1945 have since become fodder for all manner of wild theories and speculation. In the 60s and 70s, pulp magazines and writers such as Vincent Gaddis, who we talked about earlier, and Charles Berlitz helped popularize the idea that Flight 19 had been gobbled up by the Bermuda Triangle, a section of the Atlantic supposedly known for its high volume of freak disappearances and mechanical failures. Other books and fictional portrayals have suggested that magnetic anomalies, parallel dimensions, and alien abductions might have all played a role in the tragedy. In 1977, the film Close Encounters of the Third Kind famously depicted Flight 19 as having been whisked away by flying saucers and later deposited in the deserts of Mexico. Even if the Lost Patrol didn't fall victim to the supernatural, there's no denying that the disappearance was accompanied by many oddities and unanswered questions. Perhaps the strangest of all concerns Lieutenant Taylor. Witnesses later claimed that he had arrived to Flight 19's pre-exercise briefing several minutes late and requested to be excused from leading the mission. "I just don't want to take this one out," he supposedly said. Just why Taylor tried to get out of the flying remains a mystery, but it has led many to suggest that he may have not been fit for duty. Also unexplained is why none of the members of Flight 19 made use of the rescue radio frequency of their plane's ZBX receivers, which could have helped lead them toward Navy radio towers on land. The pilots were told to switch the devices on, but they either didn't hear the message or didn't acknowledge it. So what really happened to Flight 19? The most likely scenario is that the planes eventually ran out of gas and dished in the ocean somewhere off the coast of Florida, leaving any survivors at the mercy of rough seas and deep water. In 1991, a group of treasure hunters seemed to have finally solved the puzzle when they stumbled upon a watery grave of 5 World War II era Avengers near Fort Lauderdale. Unfortunately, it was later found that the hulk belonged to a different group of Navy planes whose serial numbers didn't match those of the fabled Lost Patrol. Many believe the wrecks of Flight 19 and its doomed rescue plane may still lurk somewhere in the Bermuda Triangle, but while the search continues to this day, no definitive signs of the 6 aircraft or their 27 crewmen have ever been found.
My question is this: how did they know where to search? Because this man, like the lieutenant, obviously didn't know where he was. So how are they going to know where to search when the man just seems so confused himself?
Right. And what if he really somehow was over the Florida Keys? That's not where they were looking.
That seems like that's finding a needle in like a football stadium of haystack.
Somebody's furiously typing.
I was. Because my connection is fucked up right now. So I didn't hear much of what you said, but I really know what you're saying. I started to. Hmm? Can you hear me?
You're breaking up really badly.
Yup.
Yup. It wouldn't be a good episode unless you have connections.
It's Beltane!
Beltane, yay. Because
you didn't do it for Beltane.
Just need to get in them cheeks for Beltane.
Oh!
Get all up in them cheeks. Well, I guess I'm coming across a little bit clearer now.
Yeah, it's better now.
Of course you would come back. You would come back when you go and really get into them cheeks.
Well, of course, because the spirits like Beltane and they like fucking on Beltane. This is why our episode should always be rated R.
Did I not?
No, you didn't make it rated R, but you know what? It's okay. I think we'll be okay. FCC probably doesn't listen to our show. Probably.
FCC won't let me be me. Let's see.
Yeah? What was our set? Yep. All right. Well, you know. Cool.
So I think we only have time for one more of the disappearances.
Oh, Jesus. Is it really time already?
Yeah.
I mean, what time flies when you're having fun?
Time flies when you're in Bermuda Triangle.
So,
get it?
Get
it?
Yeah.
Time flies when you're in the Bermuda Triangle.
Her. Okay. So we're going to jump to 1976. And there were several other ships and planes that disappeared in between 1945 and 1976.
Yeah,
but
there's a fuck ton. You got 16 pages of shit in here, yeah.
Yeah, every time I overestimate. And everything
we
can't
do
be
like,
a
we could do
parter.
Like three episodes.
We could.
Okay, so the 1976 disappearance is that of the Sylvia L. Ossa. And I have two articles. This is the first of two 1976 New York Times articles describing the disappearance. A 590-foot cargo ship carrying iron ore, there's your metal deposits again, and a crew of 37 people disappeared in the area of the Bermuda Triangle in 1976. The Sylvia L. Ossa had departed from Brazil to travel to Philadelphia. A Navy plane later recovered an overturned lifeboat from the ship 140 miles west of Bermuda. A life preserver with burn marks on it also was found. The 590-foot cargo ship with a crew of 37 has been missing since early Friday and is feared sunk in the area known as the Bermuda Triangle, the Coast Guard reported yesterday. After being directed to the scene 140 miles due west of Bermuda by United States Navy P-3, an Argentine freighter recovered an overturned lifeboat from the vessel, the Sylvia L. Ossa, and detected an oil slick. The missing ship had been bound from Brazil to Philadelphia with a cargo of iron ore. Hours later, a British ship, the Portland Glenn, picked up a life preserver from the missing vessel with burn marks on it. They're picking up quite a bit of debris in the area now, said a spokesman for the Coast Guard's Rescue Coordination Center, Atlantic Division, on Governor's Island. The search was called off 2 hours after dark last night and will resume at daylight today, the spokesman announced. Thus far, he said, two long-range Coast Guard planes, one from Elizabeth City, South Carolina, and the other from St. Petersburg, Florida, as well as Navy planes from Bermuda, have searched 8,200 square miles, beginning at a point where the ship was last heard from. Ships in the area have also been alerted. It's not easy to miss a 590-foot-long ship on a day with visibility of more than 40 miles and calm seas, so it doesn't seem too hopeful that it's still afloat, the Coast Guard spokesman said. Here's where we get into a different interpretation of where the Bermuda Triangle is. The Bermuda Triangle, an area connecting Norfolk, Virginia, Puerto Rico, and Bermuda, has been the subject of considerable speculation in books and articles because of its reputation as a mysterious graveyard where hundreds of men, ships, and planes have supposedly disappeared without any explanation. We don't recognize the triangle as having any special qualities over other areas, the Coast Guard spokesman said, but it's in the area where the ship was last heard from.
Yeah.
Yeah, the spokesman said a ship in serious trouble was invariably able to get off Mayday or emergency distress message, which resulted in an immediate search and rescue operation. Water temperatures in the area were reported to be a relatively warm 79 degrees. Waves, however, averaged 6 to 12 feet, with strong gusts of winds up to 30 knots.
Isn't this like the same route that the first ship we covered was taken? Like from Brazil? They were going like Brazil to Baltimore or something like that?
Yeah, they were going to Philadelphia, but it would have been, you know, kind of approximately the same area. It's kind of passing in between Bermuda and just the entire eastern seaboard.
I'm telling you, we just need to find a different route.
Yeah,
I'm seeing in this that they're accusing Norfolk, Virginia of being one of the starting points of the Bermuda Triangle.
Indeed. So, not too far away. Additionally interesting, that isn't Norfolk, didn't they participate in the Philadelphia experiment?
Yes, they did, yes.
Where a ship just disappears and men appear to get just stuck inside the ship with half their body poking out.
Poke, poke.
I've done a little bit of homework.
Well, I sent you guys a picture of it's taken from the day that the Sylvia Osa was left. So,
were those things there when it left?
Yeah, just hanging out.
War of the Worlds style. I think I know why it sunk.
Oh, mystery solved. Beltane. Yeah, that's crazy. That's really crazy that it could be Norfolk. Although that seems implausible because we have so many ships in Norfolk that take off out of Norfolk every single day. And I don't hear I don't hear anything about them disappearing. I mean, you know, there's sizable magnetic deposits in the Bermuda Triangle and all, but
well, speaking of that, April, maybe you can go over some of the theories surrounding all the disappearances.
Can I go over some of the disappearances? Can I do that?
Maybe start with environmental effects.
Oh, I see those. Okay. we're skipping around a little bit. We're skipping around.
Yeah,
okay.
We're trying to tie it up.
Yep. So there are a number of different reasons why the Bermuda Triangle could be the Bermuda Triangle. Environmental effects, right? So the Gulf Stream found in this area can cause violent and unexpected storms. Water spouts or tornadoes at sea are common. Other possible environmental effects include underwater earthquakes or massive waves. The area is also home to some of the world's deepest trenches, possibly obscuring sunken ships and planes. Human error could be a thing. So whether it be the environmental effects or equipment malfunctions, the ocean can be hazardous to even experienced sailors. People can easily get off course or worse. Popularity. Being one of the most highly trafficked areas leads to more accidents and disappearances. The Bermuda Triangle claimed more than 1,000 lives during the 20th century, which is a similar number to other areas of high water traffic. Hexagonal clouds. There are weird-ass things called hexagonal clouds that appear over the western tips of Bermuda Triangle. Some scientists believe these powerful winds are located below these clouds, creating air bombs. These are blasts of air that would hit the ocean, creating waves of over 40 feet. Methane hydrate. Underwater gas explosions caused by accidental drilling or underwater landslides could reduce the density of water, creating methane hydrates. Electronic fog, a grayish cloud of electromagnetic field, forms above the ocean and can engulf a ship or plane. The fog then keeps moving with the vessel, causing the electronic systems and instruments to malfunction. Paranormal, of course. Some people attribute the disappearances to paranormal events such as alien abductions or UFOs. Others believe the area is a portal to other planets. The lost city of Atlantis. Another theory is that Atlantis is located under the triangle, and the crystals that power the city create waves of energy that destroy the vessels above. The Navy and Coast Guard suggest that the combined forces of nature and human error are the cause of the unexplained disappearances, stating that all areas of the ocean can be a dangerous place.
That's interesting. I'd like to kind of see stats when it comes to, like it was saying, there are other areas, like the number of disappearances is comparable to other high trafficked areas of the ocean. So it'd be interesting to see like statistics from like really highly traveled areas to see if they're comparable. And you know, the biggest thing I think with the Bermuda Triangle comes down to like how it's branded. I mean, you hear Bermuda
right.
Triangle, and it's kind of the same thing when you hear like Jack the Ripper. Just the name is stuck, and which is I think why it's probably become like so widely known.
I think I just want to go to the Bermuda Triangle now, like on a
cruise. Hey, it's right down the street from you.
It is right down.
I don't know.
No,
if
but
I'd
I mean,
go
like I
want
to go to Bermuda, huh?
I don't know if I'd want to go on a cruise.
Maybe
just dip my toe in the water.
I think there's a 3-day round-trip cruise that goes out of Norfolk to Bermuda and back.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. There's
the cruise to nowhere, which basically just launches out of Norfolk and takes you out into the ocean and then brings you back.
Yeah.
I really want to believe that either A, it's aliens, or B, it's the lost city of Atlantis just out of spite, destroy ship.
It's not a metal deposit. It's a crystal deposit.
It's a crystal deposit. Some hot dog interference. but we're going to be fine because we're going to get that in for Beltane. So we got nothing but good things coming.
Do it for Beltane.
Hashtag Beltane. Well, that's a fantastic Beltane episode.
But. Yep, that's it. We had this is our Bermuda Triangle episode.
I had a good time. I don't know about you.
I had a good time.
Yeah, me too.
Yep, it was good. Super good. And we'll be back next week with something.
Yeah, to be decided.
It'll be a surprise. Woo!
Well, you said next week. You guys doing the giveaway for the free reading, right?
We are, but it'll probably be on the Facebook page.
Well, maybe we could tie the episode into that. Maybe.
We'll see. We got to have our little meeting where we talk about what we're going to talk about. So
yeah,
I like meetings.
20 minutes.
Do you like meetings?
Post-show team meeting.
Get together. Get our heads together.
I'll bring cupcakes.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah, bring me one.
Oh,
the cupcakes that you made.
I made him cupcakes for his first day on the job. Yeah. All right. Well, we got like 2 minutes. I just done. We got 2 minutes. Thank you guys so much for tuning in with us. We have obviously had a really great time. Go out, get drunk, dance naked around a fire. It's Beltane. So enjoy
Beltane. Everyone.
Do it for Beltane. Get in them cheeks. And we will talk to you guys next week.